The paint schemes, weather change from summer to winter over Germany. How challenging was that for the ground crews to keep these airplanes not only flyable for combat, but also paint schemes so they could be less detected?
Oh, you want my crew tree story?
I do. Please.
My second tour, I took a brand new P-51D dog, but it was all camo. It was a green colored, dark green. And we weren't being so careful about the paint schemes. We had all camo, half camo, all silver. We just kind of lost track of what the hell we were supposed to do, or we were getting different instructions all the time. And it was the late fall of 1944, and I was flying with a four-ship, and I saw a four-ship flying down over the first snow that hit Germany, big, heavy snow. And two of them were silver, and two of them were camo. Well, which one stood out most was, of course, the dark camo. Stood out like, you know what, in a punch bowl. And so I got back from my trip, and I can't say enough about the crew chiefs that we had. They were, some of them were our age, and most of them were a little bit older. And this was their chance to participate in the war, you know, being excellent. And my airplane with two crew chiefs, Otto Heino, who handpicked the second crew chief after he got promoted, flew 116 missions and about, 480 hours and 20 minutes of combat flying without an abort.
Wow.
We never turned around for any reason whatsoever. And so you beloved your crew chief, especially when they're running up a record like that. So when I got home from that flight and I said, hey guys, this thing really stands out. I'd like you to change it into a paint scheme, silver, all silver like this. And there was three of them. Otto, who is now a flight chief, and Schunemann, and Zimmerman, my armor, and my crew chief in my armor. And they were all standing attention there, and I said, I want you to change this thing. Next time it's laid up for heavy maintenance, you know, what is it going to take? 2 or 3 days? And they kind of nodded their head. I put it to them on a tactical basis. It might save my butt. But frankly, I thought this was a cooler paint scheme. but there was a point. It was very visible against white. And so I went operation. I said, I think I'll fly tomorrow. I was the operations officer, put my name on the board, and forgot about it until the next morning. I come into operation, get my parachute, climb up over the revetment, and look down, and here's this Mustang shining and all silver. Kind of incredible. I felt like a jerk that, geez, did they think I gave them a direct order? They started working on that thing that afternoon, worked all through the night, and had it ready to go. And I thought about it a little minute, you know, and that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to do it, and I just can't say enough about the crew chiefs we had in World War II and the ground support that we got. It was just absolutely incredible, and I take my hat off to the crew chiefs of the world.
You had your distinguished career in flight test through this whole period. Jack, come back to you for just a moment. When you listen to all this, and you've heard it all before, as somebody who did not fly combat, what goes through your mind when you hear these
I just think, you know, how incredibly strong they were to be able to deal with all the adverse conditions that they had, the cold altitude, the cold temperatures at altitude. They operated above 30,000 feet, and I had one excursion in the General Jim airplane, wasn't in the Old Crow, that to 35,000 feet, and I was exhausted the next day, much like I'd worked 14, 15 hours without a break. So they were in something that was incredibly physically arduous, and they were in danger. They had the adrenaline rushes and undoubtedly some anxiety that went with it. And for them to be able to do that day after day is just amazing. I know that Bud may want to tell you a little about this, but he had to go see a psychologist on one occasion to find out if he was physically or mentally fit to go back in combat after they'd given him a reprieve after his first tour. But they wanted to be there. They wanted to be with one another. They wanted to do their part. And the people at home did too. The pots and pans come out of the pantry, and the ladies went to work in the factories making the bombs and the munitions and the trucks and the airplanes and things. But it was just an amazing time of physical endurance that's almost beyond my comprehension.
And also, Bud never crashed an airplane, was never shot down, and never bailed out. Is that right?
Correct.
How much do you feel you missed in not having one of those experiences?
And the POW experience.
And the POW experience, that too.
Well, I think somebody was looking after me. The thing I'm going to say to Jack, but we were 22.
Yeah, and he flew all of his missions, the 116 missions, at the age of 22, by the way. After your... After your distinguished flight test career, you had 18 months left before mandatory retirement, and you volunteered to go to Vietnam. When your buddies were saying, what were you thinking? So why did you do it?
Well, what are we in the Air Force for, you know, to fly and fight? That's what I titled my book. And, well, the real reason was I wanted to get out of the Pentagon. I felt that that's what I was supposed to do, duty. And I fully expected to go to Vietnam when I was in Okinawa in an F-105 fighter wing. I was combat ready and all this stuff, and that was the natural for me to do. But I'm a bird colonel, you know, and there's not all that many positions you could go to. And no, I got to go to the Pentagon. So. There meant no flying, you know, and probably a 4-year commitment. And I had less than four years to go, so I decided to go.
Flying F-105, Suds, right?
Age 48.
And one day, though, your son Jim was over there?
Oh, yeah.
And you flew with your son. Now, how within the regulations was that?
I don't know, but being a wing commander, if somebody had come to me and say, hey, my son's here, is it okay if we take him on a combat mission with me? I would say not only no, but hell no. And I think Jim's commander was maybe a little naive to let us do that. But on the other hand, they were flying O-2s and on a relatively benign mission. You know, for actually for propaganda, they were broadcast speakers out on the wingtip of a little tiny O-2, and they used to go out and broadcast propaganda, and then come by and drop out leaflets, or safe passage, or surrender leaflets. And so we did that, and we could see them shooting down, you know, down there shooting up at us. But they knew where to fly and don't go in there where there's any heavy guns. And it was a pretty special thing to do. Words can't express how you feel, you know, to go on a combat mission with your son. That's pretty special. And I didn't have words for that. But my wife, Ellie, she had a few words to say about it. She was darn glad she didn't know about it until it was all over.